Welcome to this week's episode of High School Counseling Conversations. This one has been a couple weeks in the making because I posted about this colleague's experience and asked y'all on Instagram if it would be something you would be interested in hearing more about. And as a resounding yes came from the crowd, I said, we have to put Lorraine Holman on High School Counseling Conversations. She offers so much value just in her background and her unique skills and abilities to rally and lead a team. I knew that she would have so many good things to share with y'all. And let me tell you, she did not disappoint. Let me introduce you to Lorraine before we get started, and then you can come on over and listen in on our conversation. Lorraine is a licensed professional counselor and the founder and owner of Summit Greenville, an innovative counseling co-working space in Greenville, South Carolina. She's a recovering school counselor who served 10 years in Greenville County Schools as a middle school counselor, high school counselor, and district level employee. An Army veteran and adventure junkie, Lorraine took a leap of faith in 2021 and decided to open a private practice and counseling co-working space for her colleagues. 1 year later, she has no regrets and lives her best professional life every day. In this episode, Lorraine and I talk about what that journey has looked like for her through grad school to changing careers to now jumping into something completely different. We talk about her experiences as a department head in her high school counseling program and what makes a good leader and what makes a good teammate. Talk about making that leap to private practice because it's really scary seeming, but she has had so much joy and success as she has jumped into this new season of her life. Let's dive into this week's episode. High School Counseling Conversations is a podcast where we talk about exactly that, a casual potpourri of school counseling topics intended to grow us as school counselors, but also give us space to enjoy each other's company. I'm Lauren from Counselor Click, and I'm sharing my experiences and perspectives as a high school counselor. No topic is off limits, and I'm certain we'll cover it all. I'm your high school counseling hype girl, here to help you energize your school counseling program and remind you of how much you love your job. Whether you're just getting your feet wet as an intern or you're nearing retirement, you'll feel like you're just popping in to catch up with your school counseling bestie. Let's go. Welcome to the podcast, Lorraine. This is High School Counseling Conversations, and this is my first in-person guest interview. So I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Okay. Tell us about your professional background because it is unique, it is different from mine, and I think it's going to be different from a lot of counselors who are listening.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lauren. I am in my third career. So my first career after college, I was an Army officer for 5 years. I served active duty around the world. Great time of my life. Loved it. Gave me a lot of good leadership experience. And then I was a stay-at-home mom for 9 years. That was a privilege to be home with my kids. During that time, I decided that I wanted to be a school counselor at the recommendation of my mom, who is a lifelong educator, and said that I would be good at mentoring kids and helping kids. And so I went to Clemson University, got my degree in counseling, was a school counselor for 10 years. But during that time, because I get bored doing just one thing, I went after my LPC and got certified as a counselor, did a little bit of private practice while I was also a school counselor. So I had really 1.5 jobs, which was too much, but then decided 2 years ago that I wanted to go full in and be in private practice. So now I'm a business owner running a practice, seeing clients, and I love it.
Woohoo! Did you think that there were any advantages or disadvantages to like changing careers midway through your life? I mean, you came into grad school and you had already lived life a little bit. I came from straight undergrad. I think there are advantages and disadvantages in that, but maybe there are people listening who are thinking about switching to high school, thinking about switching to school counseling, thinking about changing careers. What would you say to that?
I think for me, it's very exciting to switch things up and try new things. I don't know if you shared this previously, but Lauren and I went to grad school together way back when, so we've known each other for a while. And I did feel like a fish out of water at first in grad school. I was 32 with people who were a lot younger than I was. I had 2 small kids at the time. So I would say a disadvantage was I was in a different phase of life to be a grad student. And there were a lot of late nights of writing papers and completing projects after my kids were asleep. So that part was difficult. But the advantages were is I feel like I had more perspective on what I was taking into a new career, what I was bringing to a new staff. Coming from the military and jumping into education was fun and exciting, but also very different. I had to learn the nuances of being in education versus the military. People don't just listen to you because you have a certain role or are in charge. Like, you have to really persuade people to believe what you believe and follow a certain path. So I think it was really fun, but I think it did give me perspective. And at that point in my life, in mid-30s, I felt like I knew my strengths and I knew who I was, and I was more confident as a counselor. I do think it helped that I was a parent as well. Not that you can't be a great school counselor and not have kids, but you do have that added empathy for parents as you're meeting with them.
Definitely. And I would say, some coming right out of undergrad and going into grad school, I did know what I wanted to do, but I felt like there were people in our program who were on that younger side who were like, I'm just going to see if this is what I wanted to do. It sounds like you knew, like, this is my next step. I'm committing to grad school. This will be my next career. So you kind of already, you had that, made that decision because you had a lot of other things riding on it. You had a husband and kids who needed probably that structure. And if I'm going to pay this money, I better do it.
Yes. And it was a great career for me as a young mom. So having the same schedule as my kids, having summers off or as much off as you can as a school counselor, was really a great lifestyle for my family at the time. So it was good at the time.
So of all of those careers, and maybe it could be this one too, that we're going to talk about in a second with private practice, you can include that. Which of your favorite seasons or careers has been your favorite?
They're all so different. I think I really loved being in the Army. I loved the excitement of it, the adventure. I love the people and the camaraderie. That's one thing that I definitely miss, because it's hard to replicate that in different environments. But I don't know, I loved each season. And I think each season really matched where I was as a person. And as I've grown, I've realized, okay, I have these strengths and I can apply them here. But recently I did a values inventory, and it was like a giant light bulb went off in my head that, yes, I have these strengths and I can be a great school counselor. And I was a good school counselor, but what I was doing was not in line with my personal values, because I value adventure and creativity and freedom and connection. And those are hard things to do in education. There's not a lot of room for creativity and freedom and autonomy. So I had to really look at what are my strengths. And yes, I can continue to do this school counseling thing, which I'm good at, but I'm burnout and the system is continuing to take from me and I'm not getting any compensation. So what could I do that would allow me to have more autonomy and more creativity? And I decided that I wanted to try private practice and, more importantly, create a place where people could thrive as entrepreneurs. So that's been really fun for me. So each phase has been great. It's played to my strengths, but my mom gave me great advice when I was a young mom and I was staying at home with my kids, and I knew I wanted to do something professionally, but I wanted to do all the things right then. And she said, Lorraine, you will get to do all the things, but not all at the same time. And that has been advice that has really carried me through my professional life, because I have been able to do all the things, and each season has been great for each of those things.
That's how I have thought about it too, as I have left being in a school full time. I'm like, it is a season. I can go back to that if I want. I can go do something else if I want. Like, I'm the one who gets to dictate what that is, what that next step is. But I also have a lot of other things to consider, you know, on the table, like with kids and stuff. So I just look at it as it's a season and nothing has to be definite. You can change and move and grow according to your strengths and what your family looks like and what your needs are. So that's encouraging. That is good advice to take for all of us. Okay, before we get into private practice stuff, let's talk about school counseling. You were my department head for a couple of years. You know, we had changes in leadership, changes in what our team structure looked like. So what did you learn about leading counselors or leading people when you were department head? And tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yes. Well, I will say, first of all, that it's a very difficult position to hold in education when you're in charge of something, but you're not really in charge. So you have all of the responsibility, but none of the ability to really do things freely on your own. So if something's going to go wrong, you're in charge of it going wrong, but you didn't have a lot of ability to be creative and own things and really be in charge. It's different than being an administrator. So
You don't get paid anymore.
No, you get paid nothing extra. You just get more work, and you're supposed to smile about it. And I think you did smile about it. But I did. I cared about the team, and I cared about our mission and what we were trying to do for kids. So I would say you really have to listen to your team, and you listen to your team by being really conscious about making time with them. So one thing that I feel like we did really well is we met regularly. We had it on our calendar. We knew that on Friday at 2 o'clock or whatever it was, we were going to sit down and meet, and that's all we were going to do. And we had an agenda, and we had goals, and we had things we wanted to talk about, and we made time to be a team. It's very hard to work in a team if you don't make that time. I also had to learn to make space for disagreements and make space for people that aren't going to buy into what the team thought was a good idea, and that's okay. So everybody gets a vote and gets an opinion, and I had to learn to be okay with not everybody's going to like you all the time. And it can be a little bit lonely at the top, but at the same time, if most of the group is moving forward and helping kids, then I felt good about what we were doing. And yeah, so just time to listen and time to meet.
Yeah, I'd say that you did a great job at keeping us structured. Like, that was something that I saw as such a strength of yours. And I assume it's coming from the military. Like, you brought in so many strong leadership perspectives that I know had to have come from there. Like you said, when we sat down, we had an agenda. I knew that when we gave up our time with students to sit down and have a meeting together, that it was going to be productive. We were going to walk away not feeling like that was a waste of time. Why were we even there? So being aware of people's time, I guess. I felt like you did a good job with that. And like you said, like making time to listen to what people need, that they feel heard and valued, because even if you have a different opinion, like that might change and you might get on board with the team if you feel heard or if you can see the other side of like, why does the rest of the team want this? So I feel like you did make that space to bring everybody in, no matter, you know, no matter their personality, no matter their strengths and weaknesses. So I appreciate that about you. Okay, if you could give a new department head some advice, what would it be?
Have grace for yourself, because you're going to make mistakes and it's okay. So it is a very difficult position. There's a lot of demands. So definitely have grace for yourself. I would say keep kids in the forefront of what you do every day. It's very easy to get absorbed in the administrative tasks of running a counseling department. And you really have to be an advocate for your time so that you don't get pulled into a lot of those administrative tasks, which is hard to do. So for me, I thought it was important to be on pace with my team. I had a caseload of students. I wanted to know what was coming up for them so that, you know, I could predict what they were going through, because I was going through the same thing with my students. So yeah, continue to be an advocate for kids, have grace for yourself. And I really think, even though it's scary and daunting, just being aware of RAMP and ASCA and what that is, and making some steps to, you know, incorporate those practices into your counseling department makes you a better team. I think going through the RAMP process, which we did when we were a counseling team, and achieve RAMP was an enormous task and a very heavy lift, but it made us a great team and it made us a great department, and we served kids. So having some aspirations towards that, I think, is noble and great for kids and great for your department.
You said that so well and so nicely, because RAMP took a lot of time. It was a beast. I heard somebody once say it's a four-letter word, RAMP, but a different four-letter word. But it made us better as a team. It made us serve students better. I mean, everything was better because we were moving in that direction, whether we would have gotten it or not. You know, that can be a conversation for another day. But I love that you mentioned too, managing your time well. I talked about that in a podcast a couple weeks ago, about using your calendar and using your time to advocate for what you need and to advocate for your profession, because ultimately that serves students better. And it doesn't happen on its own. And if you don't dictate your calendar, somebody else is going to.
I will add, it is such an enormous job to be in charge of a counseling department, but you can also serve as a great model for your team by setting boundaries for yourself. I could have lived at that school from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m, but I didn't. And part of it was just happenstance. Like, I couldn't, because I had kids at the time who needed me to take them to soccer and all the things. But it is okay to have boundaries. And by having boundaries, you model that for your team and keep them healthier. because that work is never done. So you have to be okay with like leaving things on your list that don't get done, which you all know because that's your whole day, all day as a school counselor. But there's even more things on your list when you're a department chair. So modeling that for your team is helpful and important.
And if you model it the other way, if you are the first one in the building, the last one to leave, you're coming in on weekends, then, you know, there's this pressure that is put on your team, whether you intend to or not, that everybody feels like they need to sacrifice their time with their family or eat dinner in their office.
Absolutely.
Or something. Right. Mm-hmm. So you are setting a model, whether you realize it or not, positively or negatively, for what the expectation is for the rest of your team.
I'm pausing this episode to let you know of something fun and valuable that's coming. Doors to the Click Collaborative, my high school counseling membership, are opening again to welcome new members on January 18th. During the month of January, you can expect regular weekly episodes of High School Counseling Conversations, plus a challenge to help get you ready for the new year. I'll offer 3 live workshops throughout the month to help set you up for success as the second half of the year starts. Be sure you're on the Click Collaborative waitlist to be the first to hear of all of these plans. Go to clickcollab.com to join the waitlist today.
Okay, let's talk about still more team things. What characteristics, habits, strategies do you think make a successful high school counseling team? Like, what do you think needs to be in place to make that team function well?
I think you have to trust each other. So you have to know that the people in the offices to the left and right to you have your back. We definitely trusted each other very much as a team and knew that we all had a shared vision. We knew that we were there to help kids. We were vulnerable with each other. So I think as a group, we could say, you know, that I'm not great at this, but you're great at this. Can you do this? Or I'm having a really hard day because my dog just died, or my mom is sick, or, you know, my kid is at the principal's office and I have to go get him or her. Like, being authentic and vulnerable with each other allows you to have trust and allows you to know that you're going to support each other even in the hard times. I think it's really important to have fun. I think our department did have fun, because if you're not having fun at school, everybody knows, and then it's just miserable. So the kids pick up if you're having fun, the parents pick up if you're having fun, and you should have fun because it can be a very fun environment.
If you don't laugh about it, you're going to cry about it,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You have other people in it with you.
You might as well laugh. There were many times where we went behind closed doors and either laughed or cried. So, but that's because we trusted each other and we allowed each other to be vulnerable. I think another thing that helped our team too is we were deliberate about how we split up things. So we all took StrengthsFinder and we put it on a big chart and we said, okay, I'm good at the details and you're not, or, you know, what are you doing that you could give up to someone else because this is their strength? And I think, don't just assign tasks, because there's 100 extra tasks for your department. Don't assign them at random. Like, have a plan behind that.
Yeah, that increases your job satisfaction too. When I'm working in my zone of genius, when I can give someone the task that has all the details and, like, you know, the coordination of that field trip, I'm like, oh, I can do the thing that somebody else doesn't want to do because I can thrive in that environment. So I've mentioned StrengthsFinders before, and I'll link that in the show notes, like where you can do that little quiz. It is a book with an online quiz. And we took that in the summer before the school year started, and it was so cool. It gave me a new perspective on the teammates that I worked with. Like, I was like, why are they like this? You know, sometimes in frustration, but then I saw, okay, because their strengths aren't the same as mine. And that's mm-hmm. a good thing. Like, we don't all have to be the same, but we should use that to our advantage. If we're different, we have different strengths. Let's put those in place so everyone is happier. Let's talk about it so that we can work better together and just have more grace for each other. And then you mentioned sharing in humility, almost like, I'm not good at this. And I have realized that through some, you know, self-discovery or self-awareness, and to be able to give up control over something that, well, I've always done it. Okay. But I've always hated doing it. So let me give that to somebody who might learn something new and might actually really enjoy it. As a strong advocate for the school counseling profession, how do you work with an administrator who doesn't really understand what you do or who doesn't see eye to eye with what you are doing?
This is one of my favorite questions, because I lived it and had to do it. I think that a couple of things. So most importantly, you have to use data to change their minds. Administrators, that's how they see the world. That's how they enact change. That's how they, you know, run their day, is by data. So you have to speak their language. And you can't really speak their language unless you're doing things according to ASCA and RAMP. So getting in that mindset of having data that informs your program is super important. So you can go in front of them and say, hey, we did this thing and here's how it helped increase this thing that you care about. So that makes you a strong advocate for your time with kids, which is essentially what you're looking for. I feel really strongly that as a school counselor, you are a leader at your school. And so you should act as a leader. And acting as a leader means that you have a seat at the table. So if there's a leadership meeting at your school and you're not there, then you're not necessarily acting as a leader, because decisions are being made for your students and maybe even for you and your time. And if you don't have a seat at the table, your time will be spoken for you. So I see Lauren smiling right now because she knows what I'm going to say, because I've said this a million times, that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And there were many times where I was not at the table. And so my time was on the menu and it was given to other things that were not in the scope of my job. So I decided to have a seat at the table and really speak on behalf of my department. And that made a huge difference.
And maybe not even just decided to have a seat at the table. Like, that took some stepping out of your comfort zone to say, hey, I need to be here. No one was just going to invite you. No. I mean, we're just people in the school until you say, I need to be at this meeting because this is important, because we are working with students all the time, or we have this large scale event that affects the whole school and I need everyone to hear about it. You mentioned data. I will link in the show notes to a free data collection ideas guide. It has 49 different places to look for data that's already in your school, with academic, behavior, attendance. Like, there's so much data that's already in your school that you could peek at that, look at some of those bullet points and say, okay, well, here's what is important to my administrator. I know that they're trying to increase the attendance rate for our freshmen this year or something. And you can say, okay, as a school counselor, how can I pair with them and show them what skills I have as a school counselor? Because we should be on the same page. We want to be moving in the same direction and be teammates and not just adversaries, like going head to head with each other in the school. Like, we have a lot of the same goals in mind. So if we can open up that conversation and show them that we bring value in those places, they're going to start coming to us too to hear what we think. Okay, let's talk private practice. How did you decide to make the leap to private practice, and what has that journey looked like so far for you? You kind of mentioned it a little bit in the beginning.
The leap that I just took in opening Summit Greenville, which is a counseling co-working space that has 12 people currently working here, was a long time in the making. So private practice is not my first rodeo in dipping my toes into private practice. I got my full licensure in 2017 and was seeing clients on Saturday afternoons and Sunday afternoons for about 4 years. So I had some experience in working with clients. Because I worked with kids in my day job as a school counselor, I wanted to try working with adults. And I found that I really, really enjoyed working with adults, particularly people that are in their early 20s, maybe they're in college and trying to find out their strengths, their values, what they're good at, and helping them kind of craft a work life that works for them. So that is the space I really love to work in. I also have a heart for working with veterans as a veteran. So recently have done some training and work in PTSD and plan to incorporate that into my practice as well. So this idea came to be, I knew that I wanted to be in private practice because I loved it so much. And after doing the values inventory, I realized that education was not serving me and my values. And Lorraine, there's this thing that you also are licensed to do. Why don't you just go do it? But there are some aspects of private practice that don't really align with my personality and my values. I'm an extrovert and I love to be around a team and I love to be working in concert with other people. So
that has always scared me about private practice, thinking, okay, I'm going to go into an office. I'm not going to see people all day. I love the chaos of a school and having teammates. So is that kind of what you were thinking as maybe a roadblock to doing private practice? You were like, I need to find a solution for this.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. So I knew I needed to solve the problem, not only for myself, but then realized for others that private practice can be very lonely. And so people that are in the helping profession, many of them are extroverts and thrive in that team environment. I certainly did as a school counselor. But the models that I saw for private practice were really limiting. So either you're by yourself, you're renting space in an office where you don't see anybody except your clients all day, which no one goes to counseling because everything's wonderful. It can be very sad, heavy work all day long. or you're in a group practice where half of your paycheck goes back to the group to keep the lights on. And it just, for me, financially, that didn't feel like what I wanted. I wanted to run my own business. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I enjoy the hustle of it. And I wanted to see something that would grow. And it is hard to experience growth in a group practice. So I figured there had to be another way to do it. And I started doing some research on co-working space, and particularly medical co-working. And it was kind of an up-and-coming model where private practitioners get together, they share the cost of, you know, the overhead for the building, and they make that as low as possible by sharing that cost, but then they operate together in a space where, you know, they're all in the similar space. So my office has, our office building has 7 offices, a conference room, a training room for CEUs and workshops and community type training. But we also have built into our schedule times where we meet, which was really important to me. So we have peer supervision a couple of times a week. We do something social. We're going to have some team building stuff. So having a co-working space that supports entrepreneurs was important to me. And I think we've made it because everyone here seems pretty happy so far. This is only our 3rd week being open, but we've had staffing lunches, and everyone is encouraging to each other to really grow their own business and not do it in a space where you feel alone.
So that was something you wanted to take from the school counseling experience, that teamwork, that camaraderie, and you're bringing your leadership expertise from there and leading these counselors here. And the counselors who are in your practice, I guess you call it, a lot of them have school counseling backgrounds, right?
Yeah, it's really fun. So there are 12 of us at Summit Greenville, and 8 of the 12 either are former school counselors or are currently still in school counseling. So there's a few of us who are full-time counselors during the day and then are seeing a couple of clients, you know, a couple afternoons a week. So it is fun to be in that space again with colleagues.
Have there been any roadblocks along the way or things that have taken longer than you expected as you've been trying to open up private practice?
Definitely. So it's been 12 months in the making. This is not a small undertaking to open a business at all. It kind of came to me in the middle of the night.
As all good ideas do. Either in the middle of the night or in the shower. Or
right. So I couldn't sleep one night last October 2022. And I was thinking about, what am I going to do next? I was not happy in my current job. And the idea came to me like, no, Lorraine, you can create a space where everyone can thrive and do their own thing. And you can provide the leadership in the space and share the cost. So having that thought 12 months ago, and then sitting here in the conference room with you today doing this podcast, and people are here working, is no small undertaking. Luckily, I had 6 months to really plan and thoughtfully map it out, because it does take a while. This is not something you can do while you're also doing a full-time job. So I had 6 months to really do a lot of the planning. I would say that the challenges for me, certainly the costs were more than I thought it would be.
And I think that as any like renovation or building or anything like that ends up being.
The costs were more than I expected, but I had to overcome the fear, the mindset of fear that, oh, I can't do this because it costs too much money. And I had to be really smart with my business plan about how can I spread out costs? How can I take on some debt that I know over time I will pay? So just getting past that fear was huge.
And even if someone's not going to like go open up their own business, they probably have a lot of those same fears and mindsets.
Yes.
Like, will I have enough clients to replace my income? Or can I give up the time in the evenings to start this new career that I'm a little nervous about? Like, there's a lot of fear and mindset work, I'm sure, that has to be done.
Absolutely.
And that you have to like encourage other people in and find your people so that you can say, hey, we could do this.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm fortunate to be an LPCS supervisor. And so I have 6 interns right now who had those same fears, and I was able to kind of coach them through, no, it's going to be okay. Yes, there is an initial cost. We'll kind of keep it as low as we can. Here's how you do that. I had checklists for them and ways for them to make the cost as low as possible. But there is that fear of, how do I afford to do this? I would say another thing that I learned is just to be patient. Just because my idea is on fire and I want to get it going doesn't necessarily mean that it's everyone else's emergency. So that's very true when you're working with contractors and marketing and website builders. So just learning to be patient and have a timeline.
Yeah, you're like, can you be on my timeline, please? Because I'm trying to manage this big project.
Yes.
How did you build your team for this space? Like, where did you find people? Did you advertise? Was it word of mouth? Like, it sounds like you're really excited about your team. How did they all end up here?
It was word of mouth, for sure. I got a small group of friends together after I had that vision in October that I wanted to do this and said, hey, I have this idea. And I think I'm going to solve this problem if I come up with this idea. And you were there. we shared a couple of beers and talked about it. And everybody was excited. And I think that got me excited that yeah, I can do this. And there are people who want this sense of belonging and but want to share costs and want to be together and run their own business. So
that probably gave you a boost of confidence, a push in the right direction. Like, yeah, other people see this as a need and had the same fears of going into private practice. Like, I'm going to be by myself and this solves the problem. Like, yes. Okay, we're following you. Take us to the next step.
Yeah. So I was really fortunate that I didn't have to market to a larger group of people. Everyone who works here, I either know personally and I've worked with them, or they know someone who's working here. So I'm very fortunate that we have a great team that we trust.
How are your days now structured as an LPC, as a supervisor, as a business owner?
However I want them to be, which is pretty awesome. I've had to get away from the mindset of needing to be here from 8:30 to 5 every day. So I am really intentional with my calendar, and I have an ideal calendar that I follow. So I know that I want to see 10 to 12 clients a week. I'm not there yet, but hopefully that will come soon. I supervise 6 interns. So I find, you know, I'm really in the office, I would say about 3.5 days a week. And I'm not here the whole time because I might be going to volunteer or meeting my husband for lunch or running an errand. So it's important in private practice to have times that are amenable to your clients. So there are a couple of late evenings here and early mornings. And then times for my supervisees when they're not seeing clients. But I also have the ability to do some work from home if I need to or want to. And I don't work on Fridays. I choose to go hiking and be outside on Fridays.
That sounds like an awesome schedule. And that autonomy of getting to choose it sounds probably very appealing to a lot of listeners.
It's awesome.
What advice would you give to a school counselor who is looking to get into private practice?
I would say go for it. I do not have any regrets at all about getting my licensure as an LPC. It took me longer than I thought it would. So it actually took me 4 years to complete the process. You have to have a certain number of supervision hours, depending on what state you're in, and working full time as a school counselor. It's hard to get those supervision hours in. You can meet the client hour requirements, but the supervision hours are difficult. So, you know, you can start slow. You can take 2 to 4 years. That's fine. I think it makes you a better school counselor, actually, to really review those clinical skills and gives you a little bit of credibility that, yes, I'm not just someone that fixes schedules. I actually am a mental health provider as well. So it's a little bit of credit in that way. I'm a firm believer of having a plan B that has served me well many times in my life. And I think having that licensure in my back pocket kind of gave me the courage and the push and the safety of knowing if this really goes south and I'm burnt out and I'm not loving it and it's not in line with my values, that I have another plan. So I would encourage you to reach out to someone that you know who has, you know, has an LPC and just ask about the process. Find a supervisor that you're a good fit with, study for that exam and go for it. I have no regrets in having that option.
That's awesome. You mentioned some of the characteristics or traits or things that are good from that you learned in private practice that you were applying in schools while you were kind of still doing both. What strengths do you think school counselors bring to private practice?
Oh, so many. And so many that you don't even realize. So you have an intimate knowledge of how schools operate. So if a kid or parents come to you with questions about difficulties in school, there are things and insights that you can offer, especially if you're working with teenagers. If you're a high school counselor and you know and live and understand the college application process, there's so much that you can help families with there.
Do you feel like people like still come to you for that kind of stuff or it's kind of incorporated into some of their issues or problems?
I think we just all hear it because it's such a big part of high school and it's on kids' minds. And I think you can help relieve some anxiety about that process because you know the ins and outs of it. I would also say that my school counseling experience makes me a better counselor because I had so much experience in the school. I saw all the things. The demographic was super wide. I got a lot of experience working with a diverse culture. It gave me a lot of experience that I would not have had if I'd gone right into private practice.
You worked with so many different types of students and families, like socioeconomically, racially, culturally, mm-hmm. that if you were just in an office with whoever came in, you might just have like a tiny little sector of experience. Yes. I don't know, versus in a school where you're not picking. You get a little of everything.
It's like agency work. I think it's very wide in scope. And yeah, I'm really grateful for that time.
Okay, I think this is one of our last questions. What surprised you the most moving into private practice?
We laugh about this pretty frequently here in our office because there are so many of us who are school counselors, but it's really quiet. So
there's no bells ringing to like cut off your conversations, phones ringing.
There's no angry parent storming in and knocking on your door. It is very quiet and peaceful, and I'm never interrupted. So if I want to close my door and do some deep work on a workshop that I'm thinking about, or I really want to study up on cognitive processing therapy because I'm going to see a client who needs help in that way, I have the time and space to be the expert in what I want to do. And I really love that and value that. So that has been the most surprising thing. I was not ready for how quiet it would be. I also wasn't ready for how much I would love it. Like I love having the freedom to structure my time and my day. And I also love that I get paid to do what I love. So you can make money and you can make great money helping people. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like there's value in that. And it feels great to help people, but it also feels great that I can make a living doing that.
That's awesome. Lorraine, is there anything we haven't talked about that you were like, I have to mention this to high school counselors, whether it is about your career path, any of those careers specifically, moving into private practice, or like a pep talk that you want to give them?
I would say, if you have the dream of trying this and of getting your licensure and dipping your toe in private practice, find a group that is doing something similar and talk to them, consult with them, because together you can create some synergy so that you have the courage to do it, because it does take some courage to do it. And
probably some hustle along the way.
There's some hustle to learn. You need to learn a bit of marketing. And I promise you, you know somebody who's already good at that. So capitalize on those friendships and talk. But be bold. And if it's something that you really want to do, you're going to find a way to make it work. Like you don't have to be scared of being on your own and having your own business. I think you will find clients, you will make money. It'll be experience that is worthwhile.
You gave us so many good things to think about and process. I know that listeners are going to love listening to this episode. When I put it out there, when I had come over and seen your new place, I went and posted on Instagram and I was like, would y'all want to hear more about this? And I think it was 100% yes. Like there was no one who was like, nah, doesn't sound interesting. I think everybody wanted to hear, because there's just this little bit inside of us that's like, can we do something else? We have skills that can lend to other places. I think school counselors are like the Jacks and Jills of all trades. I mean, you have so many skills, so many strengths that can be used all over the place, educators in general, really. So I know that high school counselors are going to love listening to this episode. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. It's always good to see you.
Thank you, Lorraine, for that awesome interview. I cannot wait to hear feedback from the listeners. Now, y'all heard Lorraine say a couple of times that she used a values inventory for herself and she uses it with her clients a lot. I'm going to link those cards for you in the show notes. They are these sort cards that have different values on them, and you can narrow down and kind of sort them, put them all on the ground and mix them up and move them around. I think that this would be really helpful for you as a person if you're looking to narrow down on your values and see if you're moving in the right direction for, you know, your own job satisfaction. But I'll also link them in case you would like to use them with your students. As soon as we got off of the podcast, I was like, hey, you need to show me these. I need to know what you're talking about, because that sounds like such a valuable resource. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to today's episode of High School Counseling Conversations. All of the links I talked about today can be found in the show notes and also at counselorclick.com/podcast. Be sure to hit follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast so that you never miss a new episode. Connect with me over on Instagram. Send me a DM at Counselor Click. That's CLIQUE. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I'll see you next time.